Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the international trade association representing destination organizations. This podcast has been exclusively produced by Relic Agency. I'm Andreas Weisenborn, joined with Jack Johnson of Destinations International. Today, we are proud to welcome you to our podcast in a title we both share in part or in full, Advocacy. For this series, we wanted to tell the story of usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and key advocacy moments for them. We tend for these stories to tell the tale in full, containing both joy and triumph or crisis and disappointment. Each month, we will be joined by guests to tell their tale and a key moment in their destination's history. These are your Architects of Destination Advocacy. Hello, and welcome back for this month's episode and our fifth. And we want to do something special for one of our pillar tools with Destinations International and the celebration of the 10-year anniversary of the Event Impact Calculator. And for purpose of this conversation, we will shorten and just say EIC, but I have to start at the beginning. It is the Event Impact Calculator and the actual surpassing of 10 years of the tool, a decade of data for us. So we're going to have two special guests with that. Before that, I want to do a small, just a little housekeeping, upcoming events for us. So we have both two events taking place for us at Destinations International. In the very immediate future, we have our Convention Sales and Services Summit taking place in Maryland. And then at the end of October, we have our Advocacy Summit taking place in Houston, Texas, in person. So we're really looking forward to us being back a little bit out on the road, seeing our members and actually talking about the tool in some instances. But a good reminder, that's where you can find us and what we're very much looking forward to this fall. So with that, I did announce we're going to be really celebrating what we call a decade of data here with the celebration of the tool. The tool itself actually went live exactly 10, pretty much almost 10 years ago to the date this following week. You're going to see us roll out various forms of content, so including the podcast, but blogs, writings, and whatnot, and just really acknowledgement on the celebration of this tool, which really has been a game changer for us at the destination organization level. Although, you know, my own history was I was formerly both a client, luckily, of both the tool through the trade association, used it during my time at Visit Baltimore as a researcher. But it really has changed the game from where we've been with economic evaluation of the tool, of economic evaluation of events, to where we are today. So with that, I want to introduce our two individuals. So I'm sure many of you who have used EIC, you are familiar with these individuals, but I thought it'd be perfect to give them the limelight today. And that is both Chris Pike from Tours Ergonomics and our very own Elaine Rosquist of IACVB, DMEI, and now at Destinations International. Both individuals have been instrumental to the success of this tool for destination organizations. And I thought it would only be appropriate to have them both on to converse on all things EIC. So with that, let's welcome both Elaine and Chris to the show. Elaine, Chris, welcome.
Thanks, Andreas.
Thanks, Andreas.
So let's start off first. I'll go to Chris first and then Elaine. Just talk a little about your background and your role with your corresponding organization. So Chris, I'll go to you first.
Sure. My name is Chris Pike, and I am the Director of Impact Studies here at Tourism Economics. And within my role, I do economic impact analysis for states and counties around the U.S. on an annual basis. And of course, our head sort of in charge of the event impact calculator work that we do, not just in the U.S., but internationally.
And Elaine?
Yeah, thank you, Andreas. Welcome. I'm thrilled to be here today. I liked my little intro. I've going with the decade theme here. I have been with IACVB, DMAI, DI for a few decades. Let's keep it at that. But I specifically have worked and loved working on the Event Impact Calculator with Chris and others over the last decade. So since its inception. So I'm thrilled to be here today to, you know, give some insight as to how it's evolved over this decade.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I thought you two would be perfect because really both of you have been so instrumental behind the scenes of the success of this tool with the destination organization members. I say, Chris, you are a, you know, economist by trade, which makes your perspective, particularly that's all that unique. I thought it'd be a good kind of first round question discussion was when you all first either heard or saw EIC, what were your thoughts? So take us back to 2011, or if it's even sooner. I'll start with you first, Chris. What were your first impressions or thoughts when you even heard about this being developed and implemented?
We had actually done a couple of consultancy projects that had built up a tool that was somewhat similar. One of the consultancy projects had been a salesperson's analysis where the sales manager wanted to understand and be able to call events rather than every Monday morning going through every single event and wondering whether it was worth going further in terms of book trying to book these particular events. And the other destination was looking at a calculator to understand the public relations value of helping these events value themselves. So because of these consultancy engagements that we had beforehand, we kind of had a realization that there was a need and a desire to have analyses like this available to DMOs. But of course, on a consultancy basis, that was going to be maybe a group of about 10.
Andreas, I'll jump in and just say thank you, Chris, that Andreas remembers Destinations International previously had a number. We had a figure that we would use. I know we'll probably get more into that, but it was long coming to come up with something a little more detailed, for lack of a better word. And so it was well received, but it was talked about for a number of years before it came to actually being what it is evolved into, this actual calculator. The names will come up of others that created it, but Adam Sachs and Shimo got together and started talking, and we all began working on it. But it took a few years before we launched.
And it is a good point, you know, that what we were fighting against, or what was the movement to get beyond, was just that one magic number methodology. I think there was an understanding, especially with smaller destinations, and especially as destinations started to look at, you know, non-citywide conventions and non-citywide trade shows, that to evaluate the event with this one magic number was probably reaching its limits at that point in time.
When I first, let's address the elephant in the room and that magic number. So when I first started as an intern at the Bureau, I remember doing a lot of CRM data, and there was always a field there that said EEI, or, you know, event economic evaluation. And all I was told was, well, it's simple, Andreas, take the total attendance. And I'm pretty sure it was 1033. So 1033, that was it. So whatever the attendance value is, times it by that. And that is the evaluation. Now, of course, it was done as procedure, but I don't think the number was actually really much reported out. It was mostly just what are the room nights associated with. But that was it. That was the rudimentary. And that was my initial impressions, like, oh, well, that's how you evaluate events. It's just the attendance by this singular number multiplier. And that was used for probably for many, and I'm sure for your opinion, many clients and members, that was it. That was what got buildings built or bonds to build new buildings or hotels expanded. That was all it took, was just a number of times that. And then, you know, that's how you evaluate an event per se.
You still see that out there at times, maybe not exactly that number anymore, but I still see references to that old IACVB number that was created back in 2005. And because it has been such a long time period since people have really looked back at that number, to realize where it came from, where it was a limited number of events that were surveyed to get to that particular number. And it was events that were happening in places like Chicago, New York City, Las Vegas, and Los Angeles. So for it to become so widespread in its use, it became, frankly, you know, especially as people changed to the EIC, it became a little bit troublesome, because it was a number that described big city events, citywide events, and then all of a sudden it was being used for smaller destinations. So it became, it definitely became a challenge to help the DMOs change from that one magic number, not just because of the change to use the EIC, but also just because these new numbers were quite different, because they took a lot more of those event characteristics into account.
Well, that's a good jumping off point. I mean, you see the limitations already of the multiplier, but let's actually back up. And from your Chris perspective, what is the event impact calculator? What its fundamental philosophy or guiding light? What is it? And that's kind of to help the rest of the conversation, because it really shows answering that the real fundamental difference between just taking something times this to what we ended up producing, which was became the event impact calculator.
Yeah, and I view the event impact calculator as a tool for the destination management organizations. It gives them an opportunity to calculate event economic impacts, really just knowing those basic event parameters. And it really helps put them on a much more even playing field with the event organizers that certainly, you know much more about their events and what their value is. So for the destination marketing organization to be able to calculate an event impact, knowing even just that 30-second elevator conversation, which is the type of the event, how long it's going to go on for, and how many people are coming, even with just some of those basic assumptions, the DMO can get a realistic understanding of what the value of that event is going to be to its local destination.
So let's hop to the DMO side. So like I said, it's been 10 years since we launched it. Elaine, since you were here, I think we would have been DMAI at the time. What was initial impressions of both, you know, staff and initial members who were looking at it? Because like you've just heard us talk, a lot of us and still use that base level multiplier. What was kind of it like at, you know, the tail end of 2011, how people saw the tool?
Absolutely. And as Chris said, there were a few, you know, PR, for lack of a better term, challenges for destinations who had to change maybe what number they had been or output the results they were receiving. They were more accurate, let's put it that way, but different. And I think that's how we always kind of said it. It wasn't like they were wrong before. They were more specific, would probably be a better word. But I will tell you, there was an entire task force around this. There was a huge groundswell of interest around it. There were groups that beta tested it, the early adopters, for lack of a better word. But when we went back recently to look at how many implemented in the fall of 2011, it was very impressive. We had nearly 60 organizations sign on in that very first 3 months. So I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah,
we're near 300 now, but look at how many quickly came on board. Obviously, it's grown from there. So it was well received. You just had to go through a little bit with making sure people understood the difference in how we in what we were using now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and to Elaine's point, you know, Shimo and Adam had done a great job both at DMAI's annual convention that summer, along with all of their discussions with a number of the organizations. And I think there also was a realization from the organizational point of view that even just looking at one particular characteristic of the old IACVB number was that it was created in 2005. And by 2011, we'd gone through a recession. There had been other issues like management of travel costs because of, you know, some of those companies coming in with, you know, carrying the old credit cards and everything like that. So there was such a change in how people traveled compared to 2005 by 2011 that I think even the organizations themselves understood there needed to be a different evaluation.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I do want to talk about the growth of it and the expansion of it. I want to give my perspective of the launch of it, because I mentioned our previous workflow. Take this number and times it by this. You know, it really set a huge ripple effect in both in the outcome we were able to do, but in education, you know, because finally we were looking at the evaluation of events in a much more holistic manner. It wasn't just, you know, attendance times this. It was actually, you know, let's break down those attendees. Let's look at the true length of stay. You know, what is actually our cost of sale, hosting cost? What's the actual true exhibitor? And of course, really one of the special sauces of the event impact calculator was the local implementation of the spend values and particularly the taxes, so that when we got a report, you know, it was in our community, our language. Yeah, those conversations, just from a training standpoint, just was really a game changer for destination organizations who now had to really re-educate themselves in a lot of ways about what it took to procure. But I did want to go back to the initial impressions. I was sort of curious from both your perspective, though, seeing it launched in 2011, obviously seeing it now, I know hindsight is 2020, but were there any ways you thought the tool would go or not go? I mean, I'll start with you, Chris, first, and then I want to hear your perspective too, Elaine.
I actually looked back a little while ago and found an old marketing document that Shimo and Adam had put together. And I think that their thought at that point in time was that they might get somewhere around 150 users by, you know, maybe year four, year five. So to be able to start with 60 right away, I think showed a strong appetite for the tool. And, you know, also realization, going back to your point, that one magic number methodology, it only gave you a total sales number. Now, all of a sudden, the report added in a whole bunch of other metrics. So in terms of taxes and jobs and everything else like that. So they went, I think the DMOs had a lot of excitement, and it definitely has gone beyond, I think, where we first thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Elaine, yours?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll add that I think, you know, we're talking meetings here, and that's the one that we started with. But I think another telltale sign was the immediate request for other modules, you know, nearly immediate. So not only did the meetings module hit a nerve, so to speak, or was really well received, all of a sudden it was like, well, wait a minute. I know that's another story, but can you do this for sports? Can you do this for festivals? On and on. So there was that in itself too, showed kind of the interest. And I think I always hear, you know, localized, reliable, you know, just backed up by a lot of industry, obviously other organizations. So it really just took off.
Yeah. And let's paint the picture of the growth and expansion. And I'm hoping you all can help fill in the dates. So you're right. It launched meetings first. Then we expanded sports and festivals as modules per se. And then we grew, that's upward. Now we grew outward. We've also made, you know, affiliate associations with, at the time, NAAC, now Sports CTA, IAVM, which then launched the LP, local and public events module, in addition to growing abroad. So both in Europe and Australia, and it seems like every week other countries are asking us. Did I meet the timeline for both of you? Anyone I missed?
I know you did a great job. I did a little research myself this morning. So I was looking exactly. It's a kind of interesting pattern. September of 11 meetings, October 2013 sports, November 2016 festivals, December 2019 local and public events, 12 countries. This was a stat I'd never looked at before. We're in 45 states, plus wow. The District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. And I do know who the missing states are, but I don't have to call them out on here. So we'll get them. And some have been in, you know, because that's the thing about this tool too. It evolves, like sometimes it ebbs and flows for people in their different needs. Sports ETA was fall of 18, IAVM fall of 2019. I know it's a lot of acronyms, but I know one you like to talk about too, Andreas, is our relationship with our CRM providers for the CVB. So that was crucial that our members and subscribers can use this through their own system. So just great collaboration all around, you know, on and on state tourism organizations, obviously now huge growth in, globally and interest. It's a leader for us, honestly, in that field. So,
yeah, absolutely. And we should definitely shame the five who are not part. Come on. I mean, part of why I want to actually really talk extensively with you all with is that you all, both of you, really are largely the front line of the tool. You largely get the initial questions, the initial inquiries. I wanted to kind of address, and I'll go with Chris first. What are, from your perspective, what are some common either misconceptions that people have of the tool that you frequently have to kind of re-educate people on? And I'll go you first, Chris.
I think a couple of the ones that I'll point out immediately are the difference between direct impacts and total impacts. Certainly that understanding of, you know, essentially the money coming out of people's wallet in terms of the direct impact of that meeting, and then the added impact of what the businesses that are supplying the hotels and restaurants and what the spending of the wages of the workers, explaining that in the overall impact that meetings can have on a community has been definitely one of the bigger challenges to make sure and to be clear on for the users. Also, attempting to get beyond that hotel room block number, you know, the hotel room block number versus attendance, having to move past that, it probably have been the two biggest things that we've had to work towards in terms of changing the users' behaviors as they enter in event parameters.
And something I forgot to mention before you spoke, Elaine, I said Chris, you know, is an economist by trade, but you're actually a meeting planner by trade. And people forget that you did meetings for us long ago. I won't say how long, but long ago.
You were in elementary school, probably.
I probably was. But I think that's a good perspective, though, of everyone on this call and the relationship with the tool, that we all actually do have a unique point of view of it. And I want to hear from your perspective, Elaine, being the front line of a lot of these questions. What are misconceptions that you see from the members that don't understand it?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say misconceptions or perceptions. I don't even know if I'm using that. But one thing is, I think they are motivated by their peers. So they do very interested in knowing who else is using it, who else in their state, what other size CVBs, their size, so to speak. And actually, how are they using it? And what are their outputs? And then planners, just like you said, I was a planner by trade. Yeah. So that's been an interesting thing that has evolved over the last 10 years, because I will be honest, I think in the beginning, we weren't sure how do you share this with planners, because they needed to understand, of course, your meeting is going to be different. And that's what makes this tool so great. It's going to show a different impact based on the city that you're going to, because it does actually have a different impact in a different city. So you can't necessarily have access yourself. Many planners want to say, oh, can I just run my own? You know, but no, it's like you actually do have to work, which is great. It's great for the relationship of the value of a CVB for a planner, among many other things, obviously. So we had to kind of figure that out in the beginning. Do you have a different report for planners, right? For different stakeholders. And we're sharing it. And then the CVBs share it. They do want to share it with the planners. They want to show them what their value is. Sometimes, again, maybe it was like, do we really want them to know what their value is? But, you know, of course we do. And other than that, you know, really just we get a lot of the, like Chris said, he is our, we joke about this. You know, I had to say it sometime on this call, Chris, or this 24/7, 365, you know, go-to person. Chris really deals more directly with all the specific questions. We get a lot of the same questions, and we're trying hard to obviously document those and make sure people learn from others. But really it's a simple, it's not that complicated. We hear that too. It's you get in there, you play with it, you get to know it. And the people that love data, the researchers, Andreas, love this tool. So.
Yeah. And I think that's a good kind of point to talk a little bit, to pivot on the conversation was you mentioned a couple instances that really about the meeting planners, really the story of EIC kind of has left the destination organization. Obviously it's meant for destination users, but people have interest in it now. Has grown exponentially, not just, you know, our partnership with IFEM and Sports CTA, but you already mentioned, you know, other venues, affiliates, even, you know, politicians and stuff have interest now in, okay, what I understand what a destination organization does, show me some evaluation of worth. I wanted to ask, pandemic aside, so we can address the pandemic, the next question, but I wanted to ask, have there been uses of the event impact calculator that you never expected that have now come into play? So Chris, I'll go you first.
I think the biggest one to me has been its use as a development tool.
Okay.
Where there are users of the event impact calculator that are asking questions like, well, if I expand this facility and I can have events that are a third bigger, what kind of money can I expect from that coming in? Can it support another hotel? You know, even to the point of, can it support, let's say, a TIF, a tax incremental financing bond? And they're using the tool to be able to create backup for a type of TIF bond for the additional addition of sports or something like that. So its use as a development tool, I think, was something that I didn't expect right away, but it's great to see that they are using it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Elaine, I mean, you've seen a lot of the case studies we put out, just your perspective on it.
I was about to say just the voice in the community, right? Like reaching out again to the stakeholders, like Chris said, being able to tell their story out to the public about, you know, who fund, you know, tax going back to support that comes back into the city, I should say, and what value bringing this group in, they can show it. You know, it isn't just like, oh, you guys saw the restaurants were full. There were a lot of people here in town. It's like, well, guess what? That employed X amount of people. That brought in this much money, and that money stays here, that stays. So I think, you know, that part has been great. And for sports, I would just say too, I think people felt there was finally a thing they could talk about. It's harder. They don't have a room block. They weren't able to tell their story. I think this is really helping for sports and festivals organizers to be able to tell their story better.
Yeah. I mean, if I could add the one, and not say it shouldn't have been expected, but the ability now for destination organizations to kind of speak to their broader impact, not just the community, but also their corresponding state or region or even the federal level, that they now have a literal tool that says, okay, you know, when we procure this piece of business, it's not just this facility that does well. It's actually, you know, look what we add back to the corresponding state or region, which I think is always important because I think it's very easy sometimes to feel siloed in the meetings and events business. Because yes, I understand we all compete, but we all largely are recipients of public dollars. A lot of these facilities are publicly built and owned. So having a tool that kind of as the connective tissue does help in a lot of ways. So as I mentioned the pandemic, we obviously still very much in it. I thought it was kind of a good time to talk a little about, you know, even though for most of our world, the past 18 months, you know, events have paused or stopped or crawled and sunk them out of it. EIC didn't. You know, we've seen the members pivot to use it. And I kind of want to, I'll go to you first, Chris, is like when the pandemic initially hit and members were sort of reaching out, you know, with the tool and looking at how to use it, what were your some initial impressions or reactions of how can EIC be used now through the course of the pandemic?
And certainly the most obvious one is to understand the losses. And it's been a very powerful story for, you know, for users all over the country and all over the world to be able to point out that once things stopped, that affected not just all of these sales, but all of these jobs and all of these taxes. yes, unfortunately, it helped that there was the real life example that was going on, and they saw their taxes going down. They saw the jobs disappearing. But to be able to point out everything that DMOs were involved in that were then being lost because of the pandemic was a huge story for DMOs to be able to start telling and to promote the value of what it is. And then also, along with that, as we've seen governmental programs built up, the ability to use the EIC inputs as actual inputs into the grant processes has been a big help for a lot of DMOs too.
Yeah. And actually, from Elaine, your perspective, because the tool has got the word events in it, you'd assume you need events to use the tool, but interest never really waned in it. I kind of wondered if you could talk a little bit about that and just, you know, since March 2020, interest has never really waned with the tool.
No. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite anecdotes I've heard from many of our subscribers and members is they had to cut many things during the pandemic, and this was never going to be one of them. This, you know, a few maybe had to because it was no other choice, but those using it, it's part of their day-to-day practices. I know, like you said, maybe events weren't happening, but again, they were looking at losses. It's such a big part of their business practices and everything they do. They said this was just never, it was like as integral to them as, you know, keeping the lights on. They were going to keep the event impact calculator. So, and I heard that. So,
and give credit to us too, because of the fact that Destinations International did a great job hosting weekly office hours, hosting other webinars that really helped the DMOs keep the use of the event impact calculator by showing them how it could be used for a lot of these other uses rather than, oh my gosh, there's no event, I don't need it anymore type of thing.
Correct. And sorry, I just would also add that now in the, you know, a year later, people are coming back in that those that did have to maybe had no choice are they're back. And they said, yep. Okay, we can't wait. We're back. It's in this year's budget and they're coming right back to it. So.
Yeah. And since, yeah, Chris, you're talking about the extension of our boot camps and stuff like that, that really came out because, you know, unfortunately, there were so many in our industry who were let go. There's a lot of new people at the table who are now tasked with doing EIC who maybe had never dabbled in it before. They, you know, someone else ran it for them and they just read the numbers. Now they're actually tasked with trying to actually learn how the tool works. And that's been a plus because it's given more unusual suspects and eyes on the tool to better understand it, to tell the story back. So it wasn't just maybe the researcher or the sales coordinator. It's actually, you know, you have membership people in there and partnership people actively telling the story. So which is, you know, that still continues to the day. I mean, we're very still much in the pandemic. We have clients around the world who are still very much in lockdown and, you know, continue to use the tool through the lens, as Chris, you mentioned earlier, as loss. I did want to ask, I mean, to kind of round out the conversation here, I did want to ask, you know, I love hindsight is always 2020. What is one piece of advice you would tell yourself or clients back then, 10 years now, that you know now that you didn't know then? Chris, I'll give you first because you've seen it from the very beginning of the horizon here. What is something you would have told yourself or your clients back then that you know now that you didn't then?
So I think it actually goes back to the point you were just making, Andreas, is that as we've come to the pandemic, more people have been exposed to it. And there has been definitely a more hands-on viewpoint that I think DI and tourism economics have taken for the users of the tool. And I think that really has been a long-term trend that really the pandemic only accelerated. I think if we went back 10 years ago, we would be much more active with the users in terms of extra support, in terms of being advisory, in terms of how to create some of these event parameters or how to find some of these event parameters if they were struggling on some of these inputs to provide them that sort of road to stronger economic impacts rather than trying to be more hands-off in the beginning. So I think it would be, gosh, you know, this is a great tool. While we really felt at that point in time, it's a DMO tool. We want to make sure that it's their expertise that leads this. I think that we could have taken a more active role in supporting them at that point in time.
Yeah. Elaine?
I was about to say, and you still have time, Chris. No, you've been...
That's it's true, happening, Chris. Slowly but surely.
No, you have supported them. And I was going to say that because I remember that that was fundamentally the way that everyone went into it. That, it, again, very localized, right? Very specific to each destination. So they kind of have to get in there and use it themselves. It's a standard, right? Everyone's using the same tool, but yet their data is going to be different that they come out. So how they, you know, pull from it. But I would say, I would tell people, don't be afraid of it. I'm not an economist. I'm not a researcher. I'm not, you know, I help support it in different ways, but let everyone get in there. It isn't just a tool, like you said, Andreas, for just like one department, one, let the whole organization get to know it. And I don't think it was that way, obviously, in the beginning, but now it's kind of like, you know what? The whole organization should understand this. It's much more mainstream now. Data, like know what's going on. Why shouldn't everyone get in there and kind of get to know it? So I think that would be maybe the one big difference from say 10 years ago.
Yeah. So final question, let's have a little fun though. I want to know, what is your favorite module? And you can pick across flavors of country as well. So I'll go first. I'm going to say, I really enjoyed engaging with the Australians and meetings and incentive travel. So that's mine. Chris, you?
I'm partial to sports because
that is true.
Because of the change that it really meant from the DMOs. Whereas meetings, conventions, it was so, I don't want to say easy, but a lot of the parameters are given because of the registration lists and things like that. But with sports, it opens up to analysis and thought so much more, because now you have to think about, well, okay, I know participants, but I don't know if I don't know the number of fans that came along with this youth amateur sporting event, or I know tickets, so I need to use this particular type of analysis to be able to really understand how this event is properly evaluated. So I think that sports has been my favorite because of just the opening up of it from being a, yep, put in these numbers that you already have to, okay, you got to think about it a little bit more.
Before you go, I mean, all of us have kids here, but one thing that I've always heard you both speak is you have kids in sports. So hearing your perspective talk, especially the youth amateur stuff, you all have firsthand experience on what that's like raising your own kids through it. And it adds such a unique dynamic to the teachings because you are largely like, when I hear Chris all the time, we talk about persons per room. You're like, yep, that's me and my family and my dog and a cat. Like we're part of that story. So,
yeah.
Which makes it, I understand and respect your choice.
I was about to say, I've been on many webinars with Chris over the years. So no, and I've always enjoyed, and I know his family, and I've always enjoyed when he gives amazing references, exactly like you said, real world at a soccer tournament, have to run to get the juice and the water and et cetera, and have to go shopping, whatever. And it helps it become really understandable and relatable. And that one's growing the fastest, sports. So I think like Chris said, it's interesting. Festivals, I said the other day, it's like, I think that one, you know, it has a special place too, because there was a call for it. People really wanted it, but I think it could probably use a little more, understanding around it. And hopefully when we get out of the pandemic, that will be, I think that serves a huge, huge role out there. People don't know. They know these things are happening. They know it brings in value, but that's been such a hard one. Like you said, meetings so easy to validate. Sports now getting easier. So let's see where festivals can go. But then I'm also very partial to the Canadian model. We were really mm-hmm. proud in December of 2017 to pull in close to 20 of our Canadian friends and destinations up there. And that's growing all the time too. So that was a really good one, I think, to get involved in, because the very impressive, the statistics and research and all the work that's done up there all these years. So we were really excited when that folded in and wanted to use the Destinations International Event Impact Calculator. So that one I have a special place in my heart for.
Absolutely. Good answers, all of you. Again, Chris and Elaine, everyone, I have to thank you. Usually during this part of the show, I have to ask people, where can they find you? But pretty much everyone knows how to find
Connect. 24/7. Yeah.
In my basement.
Which is why I'm so happy to have you both on the show to share your perspective, because both of you are instrumental to this past 10 years. And I hope in another 10 years, if podcasts are still a thing, we can talk about the 20th anniversary. So again, Chris and Elaine, just wanted to thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andreas.
So with that, thank you again for joining myself, Andreas, and both Chris Pike and Elaine Rosquist on this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org, or check out our content throughout the advocacy section at the site, or speaking at one of our upcoming summits. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.